Thanks, Norlene. I'm going to move on to the insurance risk charge. The insurance risk charge relates to the risk that the insurance liabilities will prove to be understated. The calculation of this component of capital is currently based on applying capital factors to the insurance liabilities of the insurer, based on the class of business and whether it is outstanding claim or a premiums liability. APRA reviewed this factor-based approach in 2010 and proposed that this approach remain appropriate. It is our view, after receiving feedback on this, that it remains appropriate. In the discussion paper, we proposed some amendments to this approach and two changes to the factors used for particular classes of business. Touching on the capital factors first, it is our view, based on a review of the risk margins used by insurers to move both travel and mortgage insurance to higher classes. A small number of submissions argued against these changes. However, we remain of the view that the increases are appropriate based on the uncertainty in these classes of business and to ensure an overall probability of sufficiency of 99.5%. The existence of an other category in one of the direct classes of business groupings effectively results in a mixture of different classes of business with differing levels of uncertainty, all receiving the same capital factor. Having these fall into a single category is not the most appropriate. General support for this change was received, and APRA will implement the requirement for the appointed actuary to select the category and then report on this classification in the financial condition report. The major change to the insurance risk charges is the reorganisation of the reinsurance classes to map to the direct classes rather than the current categories, which have broader classes but are split by type of cover, that is, proportional and excess of loss, as well as consideration of whether it is facultative or treaty business. We acknowledge the argument put forward in some submissions that this rearrangement of classes will require initial adjustment and some necessary splitting of exposures. However, we are firmly of the view that this simplification, by way of removal of the facultative and treaty split and alignment with direct classes, outweighs the cost of implementation. As Nolene discussed earlier in asset risk, we acknowledge in the discussion paper that there was a double count between the asset risk and insurance risk capital charges for inflation risk. We had proposed two alternatives to address this problem. As Nolene already outlined, whilst the majority of submissions preferred that inflation risk module be removed from the asset risk charge, we have maintained this charge to ensure the appropriate senior management and board focus on the impact of inflation risk when setting investment policy. By retaining this module, however, APRA has adjusted the insurance risk factors for the liability classes, i.e. those in that highest grouping, to ensure that there is no double count. These factors were set based on the assessment from Quiz 1 of the removal of the inflation risk module. In the discussion paper, APRA proposed the introduction of the requirement for the appointed actuary to determine gross risk margins. APRA's motivation for this was to ensure that the appropriate consideration of gross uncertainty was undertaken by the insurer, for example, the risk or impact of exceeding the limit of a reinsurance program. This remains an important aspect, and APRA has not changed its view that the insurer should understand gross exposures. We have, however, changed the methodology in which we will achieve this aim in response to the submissions which we received. Assertions during consultation, which APRA has considered, include the potential overstatement of both assets and liabilities, the ability for some users to misinterpret outcomes, as well as the practical considerations in the calculation, such as sparse data. We accept that the original methodology which we proposed is only one measure of gross uncertainty, and have instead proposed a principles-based requirement that the appointed actuary comment on gross uncertainty as part of the risk margins analysis. Finally, on insurance risk, we outlined in the discussion paper that we would collect information in the quantitative impact study on standalone and diversified risk margins and consider placing a limit on diversification benefit for general insurers. APRA received a significant amount of information in the quiz, as long as a significant amount of feedback, which allowed us to assess the magnitude of diversification benefit assumed by a range of general insurers. Based on this information, along with the arguments put forward in submissions, APRA has revised the approach to diversification. APRA will not place any generic limits on diversification for general insurers, for either classes of business or between outstanding claims and premiums liability. We will, however, collect information in annual returns, which will allow us to continue to compare and contrast insurers and ensure that the level of diversification remains appropriate and broadly consistent. The appointed actuary will be required to provide supporting rationale for the diversified risk margins in the insurance liability valuation report. Moving on to insurance concentration risk charge. This component of capital requires the risks associated with the accumulation of insurance exposures to extreme events. The current approach to determining the insurance concentration risk is based on the loss after reinsurance to an insurer of a single event at a single site at a return period of 1 in 250 years, plus the cost of reinstating reinsurance cover should it not be prepaid. As outlined in the technical paper, there are three key shortcomings with this approach. Firstly, it may lead to insufficient levels of vertical reinsurance cover being purchased by diversified property insurers. Secondly, it considers only the impact on capital from a single large event and not the impact of the accumulation of losses from multiple events. And finally, it considers a loss with a return period of 1 in 250 years, which differs to the remainder of the capital frameworks in terms of target probability of sufficiency. APRA has attempted to address these deficiencies in the proposals released last year. Consultation showed that the industry was concerned about the capital impact of the new capital charge and raised a number of questions in relation to implementation. We have adjusted the proposals in a number of ways to address some of these concerns. I'll outline those further below. The insurance concentration risk charge now has two components, a vertical requirement and a horizontal requirement. The vertical requirement considers a 1 in 200 year whole of portfolio loss. The whole of portfolio approach ensures that an insurer exposed to potential losses in multiple regions purchases sufficient vertical cover to take account of the probability of one of several possible events occurring in 1 year. This should not be confused with allowing for the possibility of two or more events occurring in 1 year. Under the whole of portfolio approach, an insurer examines the potential losses in each of its regions, effectively pulls all of these together to estimate an amount that represents the loss from a single event, which will be in one of its regions, in the next year of a size X with a probability of 0.5%. APRA received broad, although not uniform, support for the change to a whole of portfolio basis, and we have proposed to implement this approach. This ensures we address the first deficiency I raised earlier and the change to a 1 in 200 year calculation to address the third deficiency. In relation to the vertical requirement, we have also introduced the requirement for insurer to have in place at the start of each treaty year one contractually agreed reinstatement. This ensures that after the occurrence of a large event at some point during the following year, the insurer has catastrophe cover available at an already agreed price or prepaid. It is important to note that APRA is not requiring this throughout the treaty year, i.e. a second or subsequent reinstatements to be placed. What we will require is that the insurer consider the cost of meeting these as well as further retentions as part of its reinsurance strategy and its ICAP. We look forward to receiving feedback on whether this requirement creates unintended issues or consequences. As outlined in the technical paper last year, the vertical requirement cannot consider any recoveries from stop loss or aggregate cover. The second deficiency, which I mentioned, the consideration of the impact of multiple events, is addressed by the new horizontal requirement for natural catastrophe exposures. The horizontal requirement considers the net impact on the capital base of the insurer due to two different scenarios. These, referred to as H3 and H4, consider the retained losses and cost of reinstatement of cover of the occurrence of either 3 1-in-10-year events or 4 1-in-6-year events. Like the vertical requirement, these are calculated on a whole of portfolio basis. The two scenarios were proposed to be offset by the annual allowance in insurance premiums for the expected cost of claims arising from accumulations of exposure. They could also be offset by any aggregate cover of the insurer. Submissions questioned the determination of the size of the scenarios, the ability to estimate these based on current available models, and the determination of the cost of claims offset. APRA notes that if you assume independence between the events, these could potentially represent a 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,300 year event, significantly higher than our target probability of sufficiency. APRA believes, however, that it's inappropriate to assume that events at a lower return period, such as 1 in 10, are uncorrelated. When considering this correlation between events at low return periods, APRA is confident that the 1 in 200 year probability of sufficiency is met. APRA agrees with submissions from industry that there are certain limitations to the current models in the market. However, we believe industry will be able to develop appropriate approaches to estimate the cost of claims for the 1 in 10-year and 1 in 6-year scenarios. The feedback in relation to the subjectivity in estimation of the cost of claims is justified. APRA has modified the approach to this calculation as a result. We have proposed that the appointed actuary determine the annualised portion of premiums liability provision that relates to events with a substantial number of claims. This will ensure greater consistency in the approach to setting the offset, whilst allowing insurers to consider their own circumstances. We would welcome feedback from the industry on whether this revised approach will work in practice and any suggestions on further adjustments which you believe may be warranted. You may recall that the technical paper calculated the insurance concentration risk charge as the sum of squares of the two components which I've just discussed, horizontal and vertical. It also required a sum of squares approach to combining the vertical requirement should an insurer have material, property and non-property exposures. APRA received feedback during consultation that this approach double counted the retention on the first event by requiring in both the vertical and horizontal requirements. There was also significant concern that the sum of squares approach, whilst also being complex, decreased the transparency of the calculation. This is one of the areas that Helen discussed earlier this morning on complexity. APRA has listened to this feedback. We have removed the sum of squares approach and simplified the calculation to the greater of the vertical or horizontal requirements. This means that an insurer will not need to calculate certain components when it is clear they are not the largest. The previous slide was obviously mainly focused on natural catastrophes and property exposures. I'm just going to spend a few minutes talking about non-property exposures, including lender's mortgage insurance. The technical paper described APRA's principles in relation to non-property classes of business. In particular, APRA proposed that the vertical requirement approach I outlined be adopted when considering accumulations of non-property exposures. APRA expects that insurers will determine the probable maximum loss based on the nature of business written and the losses that may lead to an aggregation of multiple per risk or per policy losses arising from one dependent cause. This will also need to take into account whether the upper limit of the reinsurance cover is sufficiently high to cover the probable maximum loss. APRA did not outline specific maximum event scenarios to ensure that insurers turn their mind to their own specific circumstances. We note the push by a number of insurers for this information. However, we remain cautious this may become a checklist to insurers rather than rigorously assessing their own circumstances. We will consider releasing limited guidance on this with the Prudential Standards later in 2011. APRA proposed, for practical reasons, that the horizontal requirement for non-property insurers would be set to zero. APRA also proposed and received positive feedback that the vertical requirement for non-property insurers could be adjusted to account for any double counting between the premiums liability provision and the probable maximum loss. This was also the case for the proposal that the vertical requirement could be reduced for the insurance liability provisions and paid claims which contribute to the retention of a stop loss reinsurance program. However, the insurance liability risk charges cannot be netted against a stop loss reinsurance arrangement. This is because the two risk charges, insurance risk and insurance concentration risk, are designed to address very different risks. For lenders' mortgage insurance, APRA has proposed to implement two postponed proposals from the 2008-10 consultation on the LMI concentration risk charge. These proposals garnered significant support when originally proposed and continue to receive support as part of the consultation on the technical paper. This means that the insurance concentration risk charge can be adjusted downwards for the proportion of net premiums liabilities which relate to a downturn. This amount of premiums liability will be determined by the actuary in their annual valuation. This is another example of a change which APRA has made, which somewhat addresses pro-cyclicality. As a result of these proposals, APRA has had to recalibrate the factors used in the prescriptive calculation of the probable maximum loss for mortgage insurance. The recalibration, undertaken for pragmatic reasons through the probability of default factors only, take into account the change to the calculation of the insurance concentration risk charge, as well as adjusting the return period from a 1 in 250 year event to a 1 in 200 year scenario. As part of APRA's recalibration work, APRA has drawn on empirical evidence available to adjust the relativities between certain loan to valuation buckets and between standard and non-standard loans. Turning to some of the other components of the capital requirements, firstly, the aggregation benefit. As Nolene outlined earlier, the aggregation benefit recognises the diversification between insurance and asset risk related events. During Quiz 1, APRA proposed a correlation factor of 50%. For Quiz 2, APRA is using a lower correlation factor of 30%, as it is considered the correlation between these two components is fairly weak. This means that the offset to capital requirements will be higher than under Quiz 1. APRA has not applied this lower correlation factor for mortgage insurance, as there is a closer relationship between insurance risk for a mortgage insurer and the broader economy. Nolene and I have spent some time discussing the prescribed capital amount and the components which constitute this capital requirement. I'm now going to turn briefly to two other aspects of the proposed capital standards. Firstly, inadmissible assets. Inadmissible assets are assets which APRA has determined cannot be included in the eligible capital of the insurer, as they may not be readily available to absorb unexpected losses. These include items such as goodwill and other intangibles and deferred tax assets. In the case of investments in subsidiaries, joint ventures and associates, APRA needs to be satisfied that the insurer can realise the value of this investment for it to be included in the eligible capital. This is why any goodwill associated with these investments is currently deducted from capital. APRA proposed in the discussion paper that for investments in subsidiaries, joint ventures and associates, which are subject to minimum capital requirements, whether that's from APRA, another regulator in Australia or other regulators in foreign jurisdictions, this minimum capital requirement would also need to be deducted from capital, as it may not be readily realisable to the insurer. The feedback which we received requested clarification on the mechanics of the calculation, which we believe we have now provided. A small number of submissions argued that the deduction should not apply for certain investments, including investments in general insurance companies. APRA does not support the argument that investments in prudentially regulated or operationally dependent entities should not be subject to this deduction, as it is to ensure that the capital included in the capital base of the insurer is readily realisable, which the minimum requirements of any subsidiary, joint venture or associate are not likely to be. APRA has, however, proposed that for investments which are operationally independent and represent a genuine arm's length investment will be exempt from the requirements to deduct goodwill from the investment. These exemptions will not apply for investments in entities which are subject to prudential capital requirements or those that are operationally dependent or undertake insurance-related business. Finally, on quality of capital. As outlined in the response paper and in recent letters to general insurers, APRA intends to broadly align the definition and measurement of the capital base for general insurers with those of authorised deposit-taking institutions. APRA is currently developing a consultation package for ADIs on the composition of capital base based on the principles outlined in the Basel III reform package. The translation of these into requirements for general insurers will continue to be a component of this LAGIC capital review, and the changes to eligible capital as it currently stands will be subject to industry consultation. I'll just quickly mention level two, or do you know? I'm going to turn it over to questions then.
Thanks, Kate and Arlene. I appreciate that. That's very good.